John 15, verse 1-5. I am the true vine, and my Father is a gardener. He casts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I've spoken to you. Remain in me, as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Thanks, Joy. There's a young family in our church, let's call them John and Sarah. A few years ago, they felt like their lives were starting to get a bit out ahead of them. Their kids were young, but it still felt like they were somehow constantly busy, always moving from one thing to the next and never really feeling like they had time. So they decided to build something of a rule of life, though they may not have had that language at first. And so they decided that they realized that they could only be as present with each other and their children as they were with God and themselves. So they built a rhythm of solitude together, switching off parent duty to make sure that each of them had time alone with God. But it wasn't just solitude. They also wanted to cultivate celebration in their family, so they organized their weeks around a Sabbath day, dedicating a day every week to truly being with each other and having deep, restorative fun as they remembered and celebrated God's faithfulness. The kids knew it meant stopping things like emails and work calls, but they also knew that it included things like extra dessert and special fizzy drinks and Sabbath toys, which were just normal toys that they only played with on Sabbath. And they experienced as a family what many of us have when we start anything new. It can be tough going, but over time they grew to love and guard these practices as God used the rhythms of going away and coming together to begin restoring their family. There's another guy in our church, let's call him Chris. He grew up in the church and began reading the Bible the whole way through every year in college, a big feat for anyone, let alone a college student. He really encountered God in the Bible, so it was something that he looked forward to every morning. But after about 5 years or so, that feeling started to fade, and while the Bible was great and all, did he really need to read Leviticus again? But he thought that must be a temptation from the enemy, so he decided to push through, continuing to read the whole Bible through every single year. And around that time, he discovered fasting and decided to try it. He eventually found his rhythm and he met God in that practice, but eventually he started feeling good about himself, that he was the kind of person who could say no to something that other people did not. And over time, Chris noticed that he was coming to actually dread his fasts, only made worse by the fact that his coworkers and roommates mentioned how irritable he was on Tuesdays, and so tended to avoid him. Scripture and fasting started out as joyful places of encounter for Chris, but grew into spaces of dread. But he pushed through and he kept doing both because he figured growing in spiritual maturity is just doing something hard for God, isn't it? So he kept going. I want you to hold both of those stories in your mind. We'll come back to them at the end. Last week, Tyler began our two-part conversation around a rule of life, what it is, why we think it's helpful, the biblical and historic precedent for it, so much more. If you haven't heard Tyler's teaching, you will probably feel super lost today. It's like going and watching the masterpiece film Dune 2 without having watched Dune. You're going to feel lost on Arrakis with Paul Atreides and the Fremen and Spice and whoever Shai Hulud is. So if you were not here last week, and it feels like you're missing something as we talk today, that's because you are. Please go back and listen to Tyler's teaching last week. That said, today we're going to end the series that we've been in for the last 3 months, Unforced Rhythms of Grace, using the same framework that Tyler offered us last week. What is it? Why do we need it? And how do we live it? But where Tyler discussed a rule of life generally in church history, I want to talk about them really specifically in our context as Bridgetown Church. So this means, fair warning, that our gathering is going to look a little bit differently than normal. There won't be the typical biblical exegesis. Instead, our conversation today is going to be unique and very specific to this family, to Bridgetown Church. We sense an invitation as a church into this whole rule of life thing, and we think that there actually is a unique invitation for a handful of you to step deeper into the Bridgetown rule of life through a new layer that we're adding to our discipleship pathway called Covenant Community, which I get to help lead. That's going to be my new role here, and I feel very excited about it, but we'll get to that. For now, let's start with our first question. What is the Bridgetown rule of life? The Bridgetown Rule of Life is a balanced set of 9 practices that help us live today in line with our deepest desire and God's deepest transformation. It's a very practical and intentional way by which we reorient our lives around being with Jesus, becoming like Jesus, and doing what Jesus did. Counterintuitively, though, while it is organized around the 9 practices, the rule of life isn't about the 9 practices. Our hope is not that everyone does all of the practices. Our hope is that over time, the practices begin to do something to us. What I mean is that the practices are not our vine. In John 15, Jesus says very clearly that he is our vine. The rule of life, as Tyler said last week, is merely a trellis. It's the structure that helps us graft and grow in Jesus. The practices are a way by which we rhythmically place our whole selves in God's presence and open up our hungers to God. A rule of life is the art of turning ordinary, normal, regular days into a life of love. So each statement on our rule of life begins with the formational work, with the kind of people we want to see the Spirit cultivate us into. And this is on purpose. Each statement starts with the people we want to become, the value. Then it names the culture in which we exist, the counterformation, and it ends with how we aim our lives towards that value through a practice. So let's quickly, and I mean quickly, explore the Bridgetown rule of life together. First, we want to be a community of communion with God in a culture of distraction and escapism through the practice of prayer. You and I are constantly being formed into distraction and escapism through life in a city that bends towards the pursuit of pleasure. From all the niche restaurants and bars to those small TVs on the gas pumps at the gas stations, we are trained to believe that like toddlers, our attention and appetites need constant stimulation or they will have a meltdown. Now, there's nothing wrong with a Brian's Bowl from Por Que No or seeing a movie in that theater with the heated reclinable seats. But when we get to the end of our day, stressed out and exhausted, and the prescription is to take a load off and to veg out, that organic, I'll pray as I feel like it, approach to prayer just is not enough to form us into the way of Jesus. And so to counteract and resist this culture of escapism, to be counterformed, requires a community who all wants the same thing, formation into communion with God. And each of these practices has what we call a baseline practice, by which we simply mean the minimum dose needed to counteract all of the poison that we inhale in our culture every day. But these are not prescriptions. That's not how the gospel works. These are invitations to how most people in church history have practiced these 9 practices. So for prayer, the baseline practice is participation in our Bridgetown daily prayer rhythm. You can find more information about this at bridgetown.church/DPR. But in short, we pause at fixed times each day to pray through the Lord's Prayer in the morning, to pray for the lost at midday, and to pray gratitude in the evening. Now, I went way more in depth on this first one just so you can kind of see how that 3-part framework gives shape to the rule of life, value plus counterformation plus practice. And of course, there's so much that can be said on this, but there was a teaching in this series on each of the 9 practices that you can go back and listen to. And we've got some more opportunities that I'm gonna talk about in a bit. So I'm gonna cruise, and I mean really cruise, through the other 8 and kind of let you intuit that framework, just giving you the baseline practice for each of the statements on our rule of life. because I really want us to spend the bulk of our time on those last two questions of why and how. Okay, buckle up. Here we go. Number two, we want to be a community of courageous fidelity to orthodoxy in a culture of ideological compromise through the practice of Scripture. And the baseline practice here, the baseline, again, recommended dosage is to spend time daily reading the Scriptures. Number three, we want to be a community of peace and quiet in a culture of anxiety and noise through the practice of solitude. And the baseline practice here is to begin or end our day in silence. Four, we want to become a community of holiness in a culture of indulgence and immorality through the practice of fasting. The baseline practice here is a weekly 24-hour fast. Five, we want to be a community of rest in a culture of hurry and exhaustion through the practice of Sabbath. And you guessed it, the baseline practice here is a weekly Sabbath. Six, we want to be a community of love and depth in a culture of individualism and superficiality through the practice of community. And the baseline practice here is twofold. It's to participate weekly in your Bridgetown community and in the Sunday gathering. Number seven, we want to be a community of contentment in a culture of consumerism through the practice of generosity. And the baseline practice here is to give away 10% of our income with special attention to the church and the poor. Number eight, we want to be a community of justice, mercy, and reconciliation in a culture of injustice and division through the practice of service. And the baseline practice here is to serve the marginalized of our city every month with the aim of kinship, the aim of family. And finally, we want to be a community of hospitality in a culture of hostility through the practice of witness. And the baseline practice here is a monthly expression of hospitality and to pray regularly by name for someone who does not know Jesus. So that's the Bridgetown Rule of Life, a trellis on which to grow into resilient disciples of Jesus. And all of that is organized around nine practices from the life and teaching of Jesus that help us to open to the transforming power of the Holy Spirit. And now, on to the juicier questions. Why do we need it, and how do we live it? Let's start with the first one there. Why do we need it? Or maybe this question to you sounds in your mind like this. Why isn't my Bridgetown community enough to form me into a resilient disciple? Or how is this, that really hit, oh, that's good. Or how is this not just creating a super spiritual elite varsity Christian team? Or oh man, another thing? These are great questions. First, Bridgetown communities are and will remain the heartbeat of our church. We are not trying to, nor will we ever try to replace them or even offer an alternative. We'll get to that. Second, the last thing we want to do is to make a separate class of spiritually elite Christians. What we're talking about is simply another intentional opportunity to be formed into people of love. We'll talk more about that. And finally, we definitely do not want your schedules to be busier, and we will absolutely talk about that. We are being formed by our culture into people of anxiety and busyness and distraction and individualism. So what could a different culture look like? What would happen if we were formed into a community of hospitality and holiness and rest and communion with God? I think that a rule of life in our church could help cultivate a culture in which men step into the lives of kids in our church and our city who don't have dads. For entrepreneurs to build businesses and staffs around generosity and justice, for parents to disciple their children into holy and healthy sexuality, for empty nesters to start the parenting journey over again with foster care, for married couples to fill their homes with single folks on Sabbath nights and single folks to watch their kids so that parents can have regular date nights, for college students to sit with houseless folks in our gatherings, helping them to know and believe that they belong here. It looks like young adults regularly visiting the incarcerated and kids inviting other kids from their school to church. Why do we need a rule of life? Because those things don't just happen. The rule is one of the ways that we as leadership pastorally go on shaping our church. We want those of you who faithfully follow Jesus here for 5 years or 10 years or 50 years to live into the transforming power of God's love in your life. Ultimately, I think this rule is a way by which we respond to Jesus' invitation when he says, come, follow me. In the Gospels, he extends four invitations that I think help illuminate what he means by come, follow me. They're things that our culture forms us to avoid, but things that we are invited by Jesus to orient our entire lives around. And those invitations are to come and see, to come and rest, to come and die, and to come and rise. We'll start with come and see. In John 1:39, Jesus is asked a really simple question by a few prospective apprentices. They ask him, where are you staying? And he could have dismissed them by saying, oh, you know, just kind of over there in town. But he doesn't. He says, come and see. He is inviting them closer to himself. Jesus didn't tell them to come and see him in the synagogue later, but to come and see him where he slept and where he ate. We are invited to bear witness to what life with God means up close, to see the fruit that it produces in our normal lives. Jerry Sitzer, a church historian, writes about how crucial it is that we talk about normal life when we're talking about spirituality. He writes this, if the Christian faith is going to have any kind of impact at all, it must address how believers live in the secular world. Ordinary people must learn to live as disciples of Jesus when they are not at church. Perhaps we need a new category of saint, a secular saint, who lives passionately for Christ while serving as a banker or teacher or construction worker or artist. And this is exactly what Ruth Haley Barton means when she says, it is dangerous for us to believe that there is a better time for transformation than the season I'm currently in. What does it mean to come and see? It means that we are invited to bear witness to what God does in our everyday, ordinary, normal lives as we spend time with our newborn baby or clock in at work or ride our bike home or buy groceries or find a roommate or write a book or design a shoe or sell software or go to football practice. We want to slow our lives down enough to see God in our everyday, ordinary days. Next, come and rest. In Matthew 11, Jesus invites us to take on his yoke. But lest we worry about what this means, Jesus tells us that his yoke is easy and that we will find rest for our souls because he is, quote, gentle and humble in heart. Friends, rest is something that we need to be given, something that we need help to find. As Henry Nouwen writes, we are not rested people who sometimes become restless. We are restless people who sometimes become rested. Counterintuitively, though, to receive this rest, we are not called to take on the spa day of Jesus or the day off of Jesus, but the yoke, an instrument put on oxen for working and tilling the ground so that it can have the goal of developing and producing a harvest. We will find rest through the yoke of Jesus. And who does he offer this yoke to? Quote, all you who are weary and burdened. Friends, he knows that we are holding a lot. He knows that we are stumbling. He knows that life is hard. And it is because of these things, not in spite of them, that he invites us to rest by taking on a yoke. Next, come and die. Everyone's favorite. In Matthew 16, Jesus, talking to his disciples, says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. As we experience Jesus' rest, we will begin to naturally choose, just like he did, to give our whole lives for the sake of the kingdom of God and the sake of other people. But Jesus, note, does not say, whoever wants to be my disciple must build their own cross and nail themselves to it. The spiritual life is not about inflicting pain on oneself. This is actually one of the corrections we must look back on certain monastic movements in history and make. Jesus never caused his own pain. Instead, he willingly received whatever life brought, believing that without causing it, God would redeem even the most vile act of chaos. In college, maybe you resonate with this, I was complaining to a mentor of mine about how hard and unfair my life was. And I still remember him looking at me and pausing and then very gently and graciously saying, Jesus' path to the Father cost him his life. Why do we think our lives will be any different? This is the third invitation from Jesus, to come and die. And it is real and it is painful. But it does not ignore our suffering. It gives meaning to it by asserting that our suffering is not the end of the story. We do not die for death's sake. We die for life's sake. Which leads us to the final invitation of Jesus, come and rise. In John 11, Jesus is with some of his closest friends, Mary and Martha, whose brother Lazarus has just died. They begin talking about resurrection, and Jesus declares that he himself is the resurrection and the life. And he goes on to say, quote, "The one who believes in me will live even though they die." One day we, you and I, will be resurrected, raised to life in physical bodies, whole, and in the glorious presence of God in a more real reality than the one that we're in now. We will be with him forever without sin or shame or pain or fear or suffering or sadness. But that is only compelling news for those of us who actually die. We die so that we might live. And it is only compelling for those who take up their cross, who deny themselves, and who follow Jesus. So that's my biblical answer for why I think we need a rule of life. But if it's okay, I'd like to get a little bit more personal. I want to become a person of love, submitted to the transformation of the Spirit in communion with others who also see shaping their whole lives around Jesus as the most important task that there is. To see how God is shaping you and let that shape me. I live a very particular life, you know this. I get to set my own schedule, and I spend a lot of time reading the Bible and colluding with the staff about how we can add more realms of formation into our church. I don't spend my day in an office with coworkers who think that everything that I have set up until this moment is totally bananas. And I don't spend my whole day at home with my child. So I wonder how these practices are viewed through the lens of a retiree or a barista or a foster parent, and how we could be shaped by each other's lives and stories together. I've been on staff for about a decade now, so I'm not looking at a room of strangers for the most part. I really know you, and I really love you. And my deep longing for you is the same as it is for me, to fall more intensely in love with Jesus every single day and to partake in his transformational work in the world around us. And I'm convinced that a shared rule of life is an essential tool for us to get there. But now we must move on to our third and final question. How do we live this? This is going to involve some discernment, this next step, because the answer to the question has to look different for each one of us. So if you've tuned me out or if you've gotten caught up in some level of excitement around all of this, come back in for this part, because we have to proceed with caution. Caution sounds like a strong word, so why caution? Because the right thing at the wrong time is no longer the right thing. If we're not careful, over time this whole thing could actually malform us, push us further away from God. What I mean is this: Jesus and his followers lived by and were transformed by a rule of life. We're all on the same page about that, but do you know who else did? The Pharisees. If we rush into prescriptive spiritual formation, we are in danger of becoming Pharisees. Because while Jesus' rule of life helped him to live in a free relationship with the Father, and he let the practices draw him closer to God, the Pharisees, it seems, lost sight of God and grasped instead onto the practices. I think of Paul before his conversion, so deeply committed to his rule of life that he felt compelled to murder people. His rule of life was not shaping him into a person of love or into the image of God. It was shaping him to look more like the one who came to steal and kill and destroy. Now, while most of us aren't prone to live a rule of life in a way that will help us kill people, if our motivation, if our heart posture isn't well aimed, there is a way of taking on a rule of life that will actually close us off to God. Because these practices do not automatically form us into people of love. And why not? Because they're not magic. They're tools. And it is possible to misuse a tool. So let's speak more practically about the common temptations that we need to watch for as we're discerning this invitation to help us discern whether or not the invitation is for me yet, now, when is it? Let's talk about some common temptations. They are control, busyness, duty, and enthusiasm. We'll start with control. It is very natural to desire order in our lives. It's a good thing. But a rule of life cannot be viewed as Marie Kondo for our spiritual lives. It is not a New Year's resolution. Maybe you were here a few years back when we all started talking about rules of life. I, to no surprise, crafted the most intricate, ornate rule of life. And I'm coming to realize, I can only speak for myself, I can't speak for you, that while I wanted to be more like Jesus, what I meant by that was that I wanted to have a life more under control. I thought that I could build a life that would minimize pain and maximize flourishing. But the problem with this is that a rule of life is about freedom through submission, not order through control. So if this temptation resonates with you and you're someone who bends towards that sense of control, that's okay. Instead of adopting the rule of life right now, consider inviting God into to make you ready for this rule of life by taking the next 6 months or so to explore your need for control by engaging in some of the practices that do a great job of revealing it and helping you work through that, opening your this part of your life into the transforming love of God. So use practices that rely on other people, like community and witness, or ones that challenge your sense of performing and producing and providing, like generosity and prayer. And as you do that, ask a friend or a spiritual director or a counselor or a mentor or whoever it is to walk that journey with you, helping you process how the Spirit is speaking to you and transforming you. Another temptation, and perhaps the most common in our culture, is busyness. Ruth Haley Barton says, "Community cannot be the same thing as constant Christian busyness." A rule of life cannot make us busier because busyness is poison to our spiritual lives. So if you find yourself sitting here thinking, gosh, I wish I had more time, this sounds awesome, or I can probably find time, or let me try to make time, your invitation may actually be to not do this right now. Because again, the right thing at the wrong time is actually the wrong thing. So instead, pause and ask yourself, rather than, will I do this? Do I want to be able to do this? And if the answer is yes, take the next 6 months or so to rebuild and reorient your life so that you can. It is good and right to make space for God to be the one to grow this in us, not to force it. Next, we'll talk about the sense of duty that some of us might feel when it comes to a rule of life. Because another easy pitfall is that feeling that I should do this. It's that voice saying, well, man, they said it from the stage. I guess I got to do it. Or, man, I'm so involved in here already. What will leadership think if I don't do this? Everyone's expecting me to. The harm in doing the right thing at the wrong time is that it moves us further away from becoming people who carry Jesus' easy yoke with joy. It's not just that it won't help us move closer, it's that it will push us further away, which means we need to do the practices as we can, not as we think we should. So if you're the kind of person who does everything, or you think you should do everything, your invitation may actually be to take the next 6 months or so and investigate that heavy weight of obligation that you're carrying. Invite some people that you trust into this conversation and learn to explore your belovedness beyond your performance by beginning to lay down and exchange that heavy weight of duty for the light burden of Jesus. Spend some time talking to God about it, get some inner healing prayer, talk to a counselor, and probably stop doing a few things. Let that sense of duty be revealed in God's presence and then give him enough time to talk to you about it. Finally, let's talk about enthusiasm. A great example for this one, I think of a mature follower of Jesus at Bridgetown who has never had a robust practice of fasting, but who has really encountered God's presence in this 40 days of Lent thing that we've been doing. And she's so into it, and God is meeting her so much, and she's thinking, this is incredible. Do I keep doing this? Maybe I'll do this for the next year. there's a very real temptation to take a beautiful experience with God and to try and force the entirety of our spiritual lives into it. So we need to tread slowly and not make the place that God has met me here into the place that God will meet me there. So if this resonates with you and you tend to be easily wooed by a compelling vision or a beautiful experience or encounter, the invitation for you may actually be to simply finish this thing, whatever it is that you are doing with the Lord, finish this, complete it, whether it's this fast or something else. And after that's done, carve out time to process with the Lord how it went, what he spoke to you, what he did in you. And then after that, ask God what the next invitation may be. Each of these four temptations, control, busyness, duty, and enthusiasm, all have the same root. As spiritual director Jared Boyd writes, many of us live with the assumption that whatever is in the way of a better life, and in the case before us, a better spiritual life, resides outside of us. And so the changes we seek in order to bolster our spiritual life are primarily external. But the things that keep us bound up and stuck are not external to us. They are within us. And the love of God is the only thing in the end that does the work of transformation. One more time, this is not about taking control of our formation, but yielding ourselves to the only one who can actually transform us. So I don't want everyone here asking, do I take on the Bridgetown rule of life? I actually think that's the wrong question. Instead, I want you asking, what is God inviting me into as I open myself up to his transforming love? Because the best thing you can do is the thing that he is inviting you into. It's likely, again, not all nine practices at the same time. It may just be one of them. We don't all need the same thing right now or have the same next steps, but we do all have next steps. And so I'd like to offer three kind of clear programmatic invitations through Bridgetown into this Bridgetown rule of life. Again, though, they may or may not be your next step. So as I go through them, I want you to ask yourself three questions. One, as I'm talking, do I sense God's invitation to form me through this? Two, do I desire to let him form me through this? And three, do I have the margin for this in my season of life? Invitation, desire, margin. That's what we're looking for as we talk about what comes next. For this, we're going to need our good old friend, the handy dandy discipleship pathway. Do you remember this? Here it is. I won't spend a ton of time on the first two invitations because you've already heard them. You can find more about them on our website, but quickly, underneath the courses would be Practicing the Way. First invitation would be to attend one of our four-week Practicing the Way courses, which dive deeper into one of the nine practices. The next course will begin April 24th, and it will focus specifically on the practice of prayer. Second, in that last column there, Bridgetown Communities, would be to join a community or to continue in your Bridgetown community, because community guides going forward, the curriculum that communities work through each month, the community guides going forward will center around one or two of these nine practices every series. And basics, which is the way to get into a community, is at the end of next month. So keep your eye open for that. We're also going to be releasing nine family guides to help families begin to integrate each of these practices into their homes. So keep your eyes open for that as well. Those are the first two invitations, a Practicing the Way course or the Practicing the Way courses and Bridgetown Communities. Third invitation, which we talked about a little bit earlier, is a bit different. Our sense is that there are a handful of you here at Bridgetown who have already integrated most of the nine practices into your lives, but you still feel like the Spirit is wanting to do some level of deeper work. So as you sat through this series, nothing particularly struck you as new. It simply confirmed the life that you were already living. Maybe it gave you a few creative ideas to implement. If that's you, we think the Spirit might be inviting you into something deeper. We've been sitting as a leadership around this for the last year or so, and we're gonna try something new, which we're adding to our discipleship pathway called Covenant Community. There it is. You'll notice there's now a dotted line on that. That's on purpose. It's not because it's new. It will always be there. Why? Because we want you to know that Bridgetown Community is still where we want everyone in our church to be. Bridgetown Communities are and will be continuing to be the backbone of our church here. Instead, the Covenant Community is a group of folks covenanting together to engage the transformational love of God through the Bridgetown rule of life. It isn't about doing the practices or learning to do the practices. It's about learning what they do to us over time. But before I say more, it's really crucial that we discern this invitation slowly and soberly, because covenants take time to discern. Monastic communities with shared rules of life have things to help slow the process for somebody to join down. They're called postulancy and novitiate, which are just technical ways of saying, are you sure? These processes protect the community from someone who shouldn't actually join, yeah. But more so, they protect the individual wanting to join by saying, this could be the single best thing you've ever done. Or it could be a tool by which the enemy sows deceit and lies into your life. So are you really sure? Friends, pastorally, I have a responsibility before God to not lead you into something that you're not ready for something the Spirit is not inviting you into, to not make that yoke on your back heavier than the one that Jesus is offering you. And so I want to be clear and say that the covenant community may actually be unhelpful for you, and your invitation may be to something different if you are newer to following Jesus, if you don't go to Bridgetown or have been off or on, if you haven't integrated most of the 9 practices into your life yet, if you feel disillusioned with your current Bridgetown community and just kind of want something fresh, if you're looking for a spiritual jump start, or if you have a really full, busy life. If any of those describe where you're at, then my ask of you is that you would take this invitation of covenant community, put it down, and consider one of the other ones, because no just means not yet. The invitation will come back up in the future, I promise. The aim of the covenant community is to understand how the Spirit uses the 9 practices to form me. It isn't centered on learning the practice, but living them. It assumes that you're already doing most of them. It is not lecture-based, but smaller group-based, gathering together with 4 or so other people to pay attention to the voice and presence and action of God in my life through these practices. And so like monastic communities, it's a slow process, a slow on-ramp. For starters, everyone who participates will need to have been in a Bridgetown community for at least a year and continue to be in their community through the covenant community. And it will begin with a pretty robust 7-month cohort focused on discernment through the 9 practices to help us all together slow down and say, are you sure? Am I sure? We will meet on various Sunday afternoons for 7 months from May to November. That's coming up really quickly. So I also want to say that we will run this thing every single year, but starting in October, this October, we'll run it October to May, just during the school year to help parents out as best we can, giving you summer vacation, and that will be the rhythm. So we'll run it right now from May to about November, but starting in October, we'll run it October to May. Confusing, it'll be on the website. Each year we'll conclude with an annual retreat as well. Again, most of more information on that and registration and all this stuff will be up on our website soon. With the covenant community, we're asking, what could it look like to allow God to transform us as we rhythmically engage in the 9 practices of the Bridgetown Rule of Life and talk about that journey with other people? So if you're not in a Bridgetown community and feel excited about this, your invitation is to join a community. And if you're in a Bridgetown community and feeling excited about this, your next step is to take this potential information to the people who know you best and can be honest with you about what God seems to be doing in your life. And if they're not in the room right now, that's okay. Have them listen to last week's teaching and this week's teaching and invite them to engage a process of discernment with you. Is this the Spirit's invitation for you right now? We are all being invited to take a next step in, not into a program, but into God's unique invitation for each of us, whatever it might be. Whether it's a Bridgetown community, a family guide, the covenant community, or simply just being more intentional about one of the practices like witness, just recall that each of the invitations from the Spirit will involve being on this journey with other people. Whatever you choose, it should pull you closer into God's family, not further away. So to conclude, I want us to remember that our whole aim is to be people of love and to become people of love. And there are no shortcuts to this as much as we would love it. No quick and easy 30-day guide to becoming more like Jesus. It is slow going. And the reward of the spiritual life is not the result, but the relationship. And so the test of a rule of life over time is the fruit that it produces. A well-intentioned, well-lived rule should make us people of love and joy. So if our rule, if your rule is not making us more loving, it is not helpful. Remember those stories at the beginning? Sarah and John came alive through Sabbath and solitude, but Chris began to crumble under the weight of scripture and fasting. What was the difference? John and Sarah engaged the practices in a transformational way, being invited by the Spirit to open themselves up to God and to become, through his kindness, people of love. Chris, on the other hand, was so committed to keeping the practices that he lost sight of the whole point. What kept him going was not the Spirit's power, but that good feeling he got about what he was doing, and that false belief that his job was to do hard things for God. He was not being made into a person of love because the invitation had become a ritual. He didn't stop to ask if that invitation from the Spirit was still there. But when he did, he realized he didn't need to quit the practices just to let God reorient his heart. He didn't need to stop reading the Bible, but just to read it slower and more prayerfully through small sections each morning without the goal of reading the whole thing in a year. And he didn't need to stop fasting, but to understand it differently as praying with his body. So I wonder, through this whole series, through this teaching today, where are you? What part of our time together over these last 3 months stirred something deeper in you? What might the Spirit be inviting you into? Whatever it is, and whatever you choose to do, let the Spirit be the one to lead you to your next step. Not a compelling sermon, or a super cool pastor, or a fun new church program. Let the Holy Spirit be your guide. Let him guide you in and through community, and let him transform you into a person of love.